Can't believe it. 1 week, and I'm already thinking we need to hire another pair of hands. I laugh, coming over and tugging on his arm. I'm too damn happy to just let him primp in front of the mirror. I feel like ever since that newspaper article and going over to the diner with Jackson, we've already seen half the town. So must be the other half coming in over the next 2 weeks because our schedule is full. Brad gives in to my persistent tugging and gets up to grab my hand, spinning me in a little circle and pulling me in for a crazy little swaying dance, even though there's no music. He dips me down, one high-heeled shoe sticking up toward the ceiling, before he pulls me back to my feet. I keep forgetting that the man can seriously dance. "Yep," he says, agreeing with me as he does a little half-dance of his own that shows off a few more of his moves. Half already love us, and the other half will in a minute. He twirls, dropping down faster than a man really should in pants that tight, before bouncing up and popping a hip into one of the empty chairs, spinning it around. Between all the hair services you're doing and all the facials and eyebrows I'm doing, we're on the cusp of being the premier beauty salon in the state. I feel it. As he says the last part, he spreads his hands wide like he's seeing our salon name in lights across a big marquee. I laugh, glad at his projection, but a little realistic, too. Well, maybe not the state. We should probably conquer this little town first, but we're sure as fuck doing better than I'd ever hoped. With big smiles, we do our special high-five combo with a mix of fist bumps, waving fingers, and the piece de resistance hip wiggle with an ass smack. Brad might not have much of an ass, but I've got enough to make up for the both of us. Brad rubs his bony hip, grinning as he heads for the register. Done and done. I'm finished closing out the cash drawer and receipts for the day, so I'm gonna head out and do the bank run on the way home. There's a couch and a Cabernet calling my name. Need anything else? I'm pleased to hear Brad talking so positively about his new rental house. It was one of the things that had worried me the most about moving to a smaller city. The slower pace of life. Brad had been a total denizen of the Hollywood night scene, styling and profiling his happy little ass anywhere there was a dance club and a rainbow. Now he rents a two-bedroom house on the corner of town, and from what I can tell, the wildest it gets around here would bore most of the Hollywood party crowd. Nah, I'm good. Thank you, though. I'm going to finish sweeping up and mop my way out the back to the stairs. I've got leftover Chinese food calling my name and a long bubble bath soak on the agenda. I'll see you tomorrow, bright and early. Despite appearances, I've got a homebody streak in me that likes the new setup, living right above the salon. The building has an apartment upstairs, and we'd talked extensively about sharing it since it has two bedrooms. But realistically, if we worked together all day and lived together, I think one of us would end up dead. There'd be glitter, hair dye, and blood everywhere. I love Brad like the brother I never had, and he feels the same about me. But with both of us having such big personalities, a little life balance is in order for us to do our best work. Besides, the way he somehow finds men who are open to his advances from out of nowhere makes me jealous. And since work is the priority, we decided having separate homes was the right choice to keep us clicking properly. Jealousy doesn't make for a good work environment. Plus, that means we each get multiple closets, since he has just as many, if not more, clothes as I do. And the vision of our sharing a bathroom makes me shudder a bit. Friends, yes. Knowing each other's toilet habits, no thank you. With an airy kiss in my direction, he grabs the bank bag and heads out the door. The little bell over the door tinkles, and I decide to get back to actually wrapping up work. There may not be a Cabernet upstairs for me, But I do have a couple of bottles of a local craft brew IPA that I could easily enjoy with the Chinese food. I'm head down, focused on the floor, and sweeping all the stray hairs I missed throughout the day, when I hear the tinkling of the bell above the door. "Sorry, we're closed," I start as I look up to see Jackson stepping in with a smile, his hand raised in a wave. "Jackson?" His smile grows as he sees I've remembered his name.
"Hey, Michaela. Hope I'm not interrupting. Just wanted to stop by and see how it's going."
He tapers off like there's more he wants to say, but he just looks at me. When I don't reply, his smile slips a little before recovering.
"So, how are you doing?"
I don't think we could have dreamed of a better first week than the one we actually had. It's going great, better than we'd even hoped. Just cleaning up for the night. I gesture vaguely around the salon, and he looks around. Jackson nods, looking semi-impressed, at least.
"I have to tell you, this place looks amazing. I don't know anything about fancy salons out in LA, but you guys seem to know what you're doing."
I smile politely, then realize something. "Hey, how do you know we're from LA? I don't think I mentioned that before." I see a flicker cross his eyes, but it's so fast I think maybe I imagined it.
"I thought you did. Or maybe I heard folks talking about it at the grand opening last week." "That's right, isn't it? I've been telling everyone about our town's new famous Hollywood dynamic duo."
He says it with such a big smile that I can't help but smile back. I try and think back. Maybe I did mention it. I mean, if I didn't, I'm sure Brad did. It is sort of our calling card, bringing legit Hollywood skills. I just haven't said much because I didn't want to come off as arrogant to the locals. "Yep, that's us. Started in two different places, hooked up in Hollywood, and now ready to rock on our own. I guess that makes us movers and shakers." I laugh a little at my own joke and then remember I need to finish cleaning up. Looking at the floor, I wiggle my broom a bit. "Sorry, Jackson, but I really need to finish cleaning up for the night. Thanks for..." I'm just about to give him the polite brush-off, broom pun intended, when he interrupts me.
"Oh, let me help. You're not exactly dressed for cleaning."
I look down at my slim leopard print pencil skirt, puffy shoulder black top, and red patent platform heels. I bite back a little, not taking kindly to having my style questioned. Sure, it's a little over the top, but it's typical me for damn sure. I'm out there and fucking fabulous, and the rest of the world can like it or go fuck themselves. "Well, this is how I always dress and how I always clean, so it seems to work just fine." Jackson seems to get the point because he steps back, giving me a bashful look.
"Oh, I didn't mean that to sound bad. Sorry, I meant it as a compliment. Most women around here wear yoga pants and t-shirts to clean. Jeans if you're really getting fancy. But you're like a walking, talking pinup from the 1950s. Betty Page reincarnated. You take care of your appearance. I dig it."
Cringing inside at my immediate jump to thinking he was insulting me, I try to backpedal a bit. I mean, he's not my type, but he's not being an asshole either. It's all right. I'm used to guys not really knowing what to think about my wardrobe. And usually when people think different, they think bad for some reason, so I'm a little defensive. "Ever heard of Dita Von Teese?" He steps over and takes the broom from my hand, bending down to sweep up a little pile of hair. He looks up from the floor in front of me, and I'm struck by the intimacy of the position, even if he is a foot away. If my skirt were just a little higher, he'd be able to see quite a bit more than I normally show men I'm not interested in.
"Never heard of her. Tell me."
I hear a little bit of command in his voice,
and I'm surprised. Well, well, well. Maybe Mr. Politico Nice Guy has a little fire after all. It's probably wrong that it makes me like him just a smidgen more, but honestly, it does. Well, you said Betty Page, right? Think of Dita like the woman who sort of picked up Betty's ball and ran with it. She's a fashion icon, known for her vintage style, mostly 30s and 40s. She models, designs, and dances, too. I've always been inspired by her flair for classic drama, but I have to mix a bit of rockabilly in for myself, too. I'm too wild to be that traditional. Jackson laughs. Did you just say you're a hillbilly? No offense, but we've got some pretty country folk around here. No hillbillies, though. I laugh back. No, rockabilly. Kinda rock and roll with a little country mixed in. Think 50s Pink Ladies meets sexy sass and given a 21st century twist. Jackson smiles, tilting his head as he leans on the broom and looks me up and down, obvious in his appraisal. I freeze and can't decide if I feel good or bad about his attentions. I should be able to tell, but I just can't get a read on him, and that makes me nervous. While I normally go for rougher types, there's a little something in his overall vibe that leaves me questioning just how vanilla he really is. Jackson breaks the tension after a moment, pursing his lips and humming.
Well, whatever you call it, it works for you.
His face stays serious for a moment, waiting for my reaction, but I stay quiet for a change. Talking is the easiest way to drag this out, and I just want to turn in. Brad would be fucking proud of me for keeping my big mouth shut, because that's a rare reaction for me. I've got a bad habit of talking my way into problems, and sometimes not being able to back out without shit going down. Actually, one of the first times Brad and I worked together, that was the case. Jackson, not hearing the thank you he's expecting, changes tack and smiles again.
Hey, you had dinner yet? We could grab something to eat.
He looks like an earnest little boy, and I'm about to snatch his new favorite toy away. Me. But I'm not the kind to be treated as anyone's little plaything. That's probably part of the reason I have such a problem with the bad boys. I can get on for the ride, but eventually, I want to take the wheel sometimes too. Jackson strikes me as the type to want a sweet little woman who does what he says. Definitely not the kind to let me run full throttle on occasion. And that, more than anything, makes up my mind for me. Thanks, Jackson. But I'm beat. I just need a little downtime to recover from the crazy week and get ready to do it all again. His face falls in disappointment, but with a breath, he rallies.
Sure, I understand. Maybe some other time.
I hum noncommittally and walk him toward the door, a clear indication that I'm dismissing him. He relents and follows me, stepping outside as I pull the door open. He pauses, looking down at me just as we're nearly pressed against each other, while he slides his way through the door. Suddenly, I'm aware of how much bigger than me he is. I'm not a tiny woman. Well, not that tiny. But even in my 5-inch platforms, he's got at least 6 inches of height on me. But where I'm curvy and full-chested, he's slender and wiry. As I look up, I don't want to back up. I don't want to give him the impression that he's got rights in my own store. But I do lean back in an attempt to get some personal space. This is my bubble, and that is your bubble, dude. His eyes are flickering, but I don't feel heat. His eyes are stone cold as he looks at me. Not like a man looks at a woman. Not even like a human being looks at another human being. But like someone would look at a bug,
or maybe a bauble in the store that you want to buy, only to throw away later. I feel the decrease in space on a visceral level as he leans in, turning my face away as he kisses my cheek. His lips are dry, papery thin as he holds them against my cheek for a split second that feels like an eternity. I press against his chest, cringing away, desperate to get him the fuck out of here. Look, Jackson, one of my faults is I'm blunt as fuck, so I'm just gonna say this. I'm new to town and not looking for anything romantic. Friends, sure, but nothing more. I appreciate your help with the city council stuff, but that's it. Jackson smiles at me.
Sure, I get it. But you won't be new to town forever. Just trying to get to know the new girl in town.
It sounds reasonable, but makes me narrow my eyes at him anyway. I may not be new in town forever, but after what I just felt, if hell froze over and Satan himself knocked on the door asking for a date, I might be more interested in the Prince of Darkness than this man. I understand. Please, I need to get cleaned up. He steps further out and begins to walk away, turning to offer a two-finger wave.
I'll see you later, Michaela.
I watch as he gets further away. Nothing he just said was off, but still, there's something about him that gives me pause. I look up and down the dark sidewalk, noting how alone we are. I still haven't gotten used to how things are so quiet around here. Except for certain nights, it's one of those towns that rolls up the sidewalks when the sun goes down. A hell of a long way from LA with a quiet time of 3:30 in the morning. Sometimes. If Jackson had nefarious intentions, he damn sure would have had an opportunity. With a sigh, I shake my head, telling myself that I'm not in LA. And every nice guy that chats me up isn't a boogeyman I need to be wary of. Right before I turn inside, a red light twinkles across the street, and I squint to get a better view. The red cherry of a cigarette. Evan. Yeah, Evan's his name.
Chapter 6. Evan. I'm a watcher. I can't help it. Ever since I got back from my last deployment, where I spent days in hiding, frozen in mountainside caves or rooftops or wherever the fuck they sent me, staring at the world around me through a scope, I have kept the same habits. Don't engage. Don't draw attention. Just lie low and observe, and you'll know more about everyone and everything than you thought possible. I've relaxed a bit in the time since I've been home, made a few friends who can put up with me running hot and cold, and bought a big-ass bike that draws attention but turns people off from the dirty biker. But I still watch. Mostly, though, I watch because I still don't feel like I belong. Sure, TJ puts up with my ass and old Earl holds out hope for me. But when I walk around town or when I go to the supermarket, the people I pass just don't seem like the same species as me. They're smiling in that sort of pleasant smartphone-induced haze that's filled with Facebook updates, manufactured outrage over some people you don't really give two shits about, and kitten pictures. Part of me remembers the time I was about the same. Just a softer, carefree kid coming home to a working-class house, with parents too busy to pay any attention to me and TJ unless the school was calling again. I just kind of skated by, passed my classes, hung out with buddies, and just coasted through days without much thought. Quiet and shadowed against the front of my building, I've downed two monsters while peering into the salon across from me, still caught in my reflections. Why did I join the army? It wasn't out of any great desire to wrap myself in the flag and go play soldier boy. I remember that. I'd seen the JROTC crew sweating it out in the parking lot, twirling their rifles and shining their helmets while my friends and I sat on tailgates in the school lot, just goofing off. I thought they looked like idiots. So why did I join? I guess the answer's simple. It was something to do to get me out of here and grow up. I saw friends getting more and more lost, trying drugs and working dead-end jobs. And at some point I realized I wanted more than that. I figured the military might make a man out of me. How was I supposed to anticipate spending most of my time outside of basic training in a godforsaken desert? How could I have known what I would see, what I would have to do? I watched Brad leave, and my eyes tick back to Michaela, who is sweeping up, bending over in a skirt that hugs her every curve like it was custom made for her. She may be a pretty pink princess, but she's built like a pinup queen. Hell, I don't know. She's a Hollywood girl. Maybe it was made for her curvy measurements. She hasn't made a big deal of her background. I think she's left that in Brad's hands, but the rumors have gotten around, and a few people have Googled her. Supposedly, she's done some pretty famous shit. Not that they advertise who cuts the hair on summer blockbusters. I'm about to go inside for the evening when I see that prick, Jackson, striding down the sidewalk, and I shrink even farther into the shadows so he won't see me. I stand there, hidden except for the wisps of smoke from the cigarette I'm just holding as a cover while I stand there not moving, watching for 20 minutes while he chats up Michaela, obviously trying to lay the Mac down on her. He even tries sweeping like a dutiful servant before she ushers him out of the front door. I have to smirk. I may not know a lot about Michaela, but it's not the way to impress that woman. She's the kind who I bet loves to get treated like a queen, but only from a man strong enough. My fist tightens against my thigh when I see him lean in to kiss her, but I damn near guffaw out loud when I see her bob and duck away from his advance. Damn. Last time I saw moves like that was when Ali was making people look like fools in a boxing ring on YouTube. Good girl. Smart girl, I think. You don't want to let him in even an inch. He walks away, turning back for one more wave, but she stays outside, glancing along the street for a moment. I predict when her gaze will hit the front of the garage and take my first drag on my cancer stick, lighting up the cherry, and like a moth to a flame, I feel it when her eyes latch onto my location. It's not what I should do, intentionally drawing her attention like that. And honestly, I don't even know why I do it. I just want her to know I'm here. She squints for a moment, making sure her eyes aren't playing tricks on her. I toss my can to the side, where it rattles as it makes its way into the trash barrel that TJ insists on keeping right outside the office door. Probably because of my damn cans. I'm smiling, knowing Michaela's about to hair flip away again and stomp inside. I'm already focused on her hips, ready for the quick view of her ass in that leopard skirt, when I realize that she's not turning to go inside, and instead those curvy hips are getting closer as she struts across the street toward me. As she gets close, I look her up and down. So wanting to see the bike again? She's not amused. Hey, asshole. You just perving out over here now? Get an eyeful? I smile, but it's a small consolation. Evan. Her thunder stolen. She stares at me confused. Huh? I raise an eyebrow. You called me asshole. My name's Evan. Patting my chest in a mocking thump, then pointing at her. Me, Evan. You, princess. Just thought you'd want to know who you're bitching at. Continue. I wave my hand in a come-on gesture, since while I know I've knocked her back a little, she's not the kind to stay that way for long. She smirks, continuing. I said, Evan, a.k.a. Pervy McPerverson, maybe you should take a picture. It'd last longer. She eyes me like saying my name is asking her to chug a lima bean juice frappe. I smile, and it's a real one. a rare occurrence these days, as I'm struck with a thought. Curious, I ask her. Maybe one of you trespassing on my bike. How'd that turn out anyway? Get what you needed? It's the longest string of speech I've offered her yet, and judging by the shock on her face, she realizes that too. Her sails deflate, and while it takes a little bit out of the fiery sexiness she's got, it also makes her cuter in a lot of ways. Yeah, about that. I really am sorry. I did try to ask, and when nobody answered, I meant to just stand in front of it and not touch. I got carried away. I'd say it won't happen again, but that'd be a lie. My whole life is pretty much me getting carried away by crazy ideas and wild adventures. I huff out a laugh at her honest admission. So tell me, what's the craziest idea, the wildest adventure you've ever been carried away on? She looks up to the sky like there's an answer written in the sparks of the stars, humming as she searches her memory. Considering how long it's taking, either she's going to lie her ass off, or she actually has gotten into some crazy shit. I'm kinda hoping it's the second. Finally, looking me in the eye, she starts. Well, I'd say the time I dared to touch a guy's bike without permission, but maybe that's not so crazy after all. How about ditching Hollywood and moving to a new town to start a new business when I only know one person in the whole town? Meh, you know that too. Let's see. She taps her lips with black painted nails that glitter in the streetlights, and I feel a long-forgotten tingle in my jeans. It's not that the equipment doesn't work, but usually the demons are running around too much for me to do anything about it. Well, I ask, trying not to laugh. Let me guess. You went to a club and Leonardo DiCaprio walked in, and walked out 10 minutes later with you and every other woman in the club in tow.
Leo? She asks. Give me some credit. It'd take him more than 5 minutes for me alone. 6 at least. Anyway, yep, craziest adventure. I once hitchhiked across the state line to Nevada, just a backpack of snacks and $100 to my name. Rode with a truck driver on the way there and a group of bikers on the way back. In hindsight, they might have been a motorcycle club, but I didn't care at the time. They were just going in the right direction.
My eyes go wide. That's a bit wilder than I'd thought. Maybe even bordering on stupid. What was in Nevada? Hitting the slots with that 100? Michaela leans in to whisper like she doesn't want anyone to hear, even though we're alone on the darkened street.
I went to a Prince concert.
I realize how close she is, and my heartbeat picks up as I look at her. All that for a concert. Must have been some show. She leans back, eyes meeting mine, and grins.
That's not the crazy part. The crazy part is that I hitchhiked with a trucker and a biker gang to Vegas and back for a Prince concert alone.
She pauses for dramatic effect.
When I was 16. And lived to tell the tale. It was fun, and I was damn lucky.
All right, not bordering on stupid, but about 3 days past the line of stupid. At least she seems to recognize how insane it was. That's a dangerous adventure. Hope you're a little smarter about your escapades now. She smirks at me, tilting her head in a way that sends another tingle down my spine.
Sometimes, yes. Sometimes, no. You only live once, so I'm going for it. Balls to the wall. Speaking of, come on.
She grabs at my hand like she's ready to lead me somewhere, lifting her chin toward her salon.
Let me show you something.
I'm a little stunned. Nobody willingly touches me these days. Everyone's too scared of the growling, ticking time bomb that I am to even approach me. I'm surprised some people don't ask to see my rabies tag. But she just takes my hand like it's no big deal. Crazy and wild, indeed. I'm curious what she's up to, so I follow, prowling across the street with her. She pulls open the salon doors, leading me inside, and walks up to a wall in the reception area, Well, you wanted to see it. There you go. I can't really see this angle from my shop front, so I look around and see what she's talking about. The photo of her posed leaning over my bike looks like something that you'd find on one of those old motorcycle calendars. Miss July, because she's so damn hot. But whoever did the filtering and printing did a lot to up the class level a notch, making it classy and not trashy. The black and white coloring gives it a vintage feel, highlighting the curves of her body and my bike. I instantly memorize it because it's probably the hottest thing I've ever seen, and I know I'll be jacking off to that image later tonight. I turn toward Michaela, giving her a low whistle. I don't want to sound rude, but you look sexy as fuck in this picture. Maybe I should have let you take a few more with my bike before running you off. If I thought she'd be turned off by my lack of finesse, I'm dead wrong, because she moves in close, rising up to her tiptoes in those damn high heels, to press her lips to mine. It's sultry and heated, even as her lips simply move against mine, not begging entry, just enjoying the moment. She breaks contact, leaving my lips burning, and looks into my eyes. Well, Evan? You going to be rude some more? Before I know what I'm doing, I grab her around the waist, kissing her back forcefully, pulling her body in tight to press against mine. Her glorious mix of soft curves and firm flats making my heart race. My cock lets loose a battle cry that I haven't felt in a long time, raging to full hardness in my jeans as I reach down to knead her ass. She lets out a whimpering sigh of delight, and I take advantage, slipping my tongue in to tangle with hers. It feels like sparks are flicking against my skin everywhere we touch as our lips work at each other. She slips a hand up to my hair, threading the strands through her fingers and gently pulling me even deeper. Her other hand claws at my back, those manicured nails scratching my shoulder blade deeply. The flash of pain wakes me up, and I pull back, resting my forehead against hers, my breath coming in pants as I try to recover. Michaela's breathing is even heavier, her eyes wild. What's wrong? I take her arms in my hands and nudge her away to look her in the eye. You don't want to do this. Crazy and wild adventures might be your thing, but I'm not an adventure you want to try out. You'll just get yourself hurt. I'm a damn nosediving plane, just trying to stay steady and praying I don't pancake when I hit rock bottom. And fucking the new chick across the street damn sure isn't gonna make my life any easier. I step back, still trying to shake off the effect she's had on me. My body is crying out, no part of it louder than my cock, which is screaming at me to turn the fuck around and go back. It's forgotten what a real woman feels like. I ignore it, using the last little scrap of decency left in me to keep my feet pointing in the right direction. Walking out the door, I hear her behind me. Bye, Evan.
Chapter 7. Michaela. And so anyway, John was like, I saw this on Netflix, when I was thinking the whole time, you've just been watching porn again. So I turned to him and said, if you think I'm gonna put my mouth anywhere near. I tune out the chatter, trying desperately to focus as another one of my customers seems to want to treat a haircut like a chance to engage in some free sex counseling or something. Maybe it's our image. The cheesecake shot of me on the motorcycle probably doesn't help, even if it is fucking awesome. But with Brad and me being a little more out there than the average person around here, paired with our natural flirtatious natures, people think we're sex experts or something. I wish. Right now, the only thing going through my mind is fuck me running. Or standing, or lying down, or sitting. Or basically any damn way that doesn't involve the police. Since kissing Evan a few days ago, riding that man to oblivion is all I can think about.
Come to think of it, maybe I am a little more sexpert than most, because my mind is coming up with some pretty inspired ideas right now. Straddling him as we race down a deserted road probably isn't the best idea, though. I've gotten through the days, seeing customers virtually back-to-back all day. I really haven't had time to count my lucky stars, but Brad was right last week. We might need to look at hiring another pair of hands around here. Front desk, cleanup, even another stylist. I remind myself of that again as Mrs. Alameda in front of me keeps going on about her husband. While the hustle has helped keep me from going nuts, more than once Brad has caught me daydreaming as I stare out the window across the street. I haven't told him why yet, but he's smart. He knows. He just hasn't said anything yet, but he knows I like men like Evan. And motorcycles. And bad boys on motorcycles. Speaking of, I glance up to stare out the window and across the street, straight into his garage. It didn't take me long to figure out that by putting my clients in the first chair on the left side, I could keep track of the big doors on the shop. And it only took me about 5 minutes after they opened Monday morning to realize we have a clear shot to see inside as they work on cars. Can I get an amen for beautiful weather? I finish up with Mrs. Alameda and swipe her card before standing behind the counter and looking out across the street during the 10 minutes I've got open in my schedule, taking advantage of the free shot I'm getting. And I'll admit that maybe, just maybe, I'm watching like the pervert I accused Evan of being. But right now, he's working on a truck, his muscular arms flexing as he turns some sort of wrench while taking the rear tires off. I don't care if it makes me a pervert or not. My eyes are locked onto him, memorizing every detail. I hear Brad Tisk behind me. Girl, are you at it again? I smile, turning just my head to answer. Hell to the yes, I am. Hey, I see there's another guy over there working on a car. Who do you think he is? Brad sighs, looking to the heavens as he comes over from his station, probably praying for strength not to wring my neck. He looks out the window for a moment, then shrugs. Considering your boy told me he owns the shop with his brother, and that guy is a younger, sweeter-looking version of your asshole boy toy obsession, I'd lay bets that he's the brother. I'm brilliant at deduction like that. Just call me Sherlock fucking Holmes. I laugh, shaking my head. You know, I read somewhere that Holmes and Watson probably did the dirty in Arthur Conan Doyle's private notebooks. It ain't dirty. Well, not too dirty, unless that's your kink, Brad says with a smirk. So, about your boyfriend? I glower at Brad, elbowing him in the side. He's not my boyfriend. But he's damn sure gonna take me for a ride. On that bike or otherwise. A timer chimes softly, and I walk back toward my second favorite chair, where I can still get a view of Evan at work, but not as good a view. I've got another client in it, chilling out with her earbuds in while a heat-activated conditioner soaks into her blonde locks. I pat her shoulder, and she opens an eye, popping out an earbud. Hey, Rose, your conditioning treatment is done. Ready to wash up? Rose sighs, taking out the other earbud, looking disappointed. Already time? Damn, my audiobook was just getting to the good stuff. Good stuff like good stuff? Well, don't let me stop you. Just let it play out loud while I rinse your hair, and maybe we'll all enjoy the good stuff for a minute. Lord knows I'm not getting any otherwise. Rose, who's a little older than me and totally the good girl with a deep-seated naughty streak that will rock some guy's world someday, laughs,
popping the earbud jack out of her tablet to let the audiobook play.
Throwing her onto the bed, the pirate captain growls as he rips her bodice clean up the front, leaving her breasts heaving into the chilled air. Diving in, he suckles her nipple, her wanton body writhing in need for the long, hard sword she felt pressing against her through his tight breeches.
"Please, Captain, please," she begs. "Give it to me."
"Aye," the captain says, leering at her. "I'll make you shiver on me timber."
I bust out in raucous laughter, unable to take any more. What the hell are you listening to, Rose? Some pirate porn shit? It's literally a bodice ripper. She's laughing now, too, and Brad just stares at us like we're from an alien species before he gripes. Is that really what women read? Long, hard sword? Shiver on me timber? Seriously? It's not that difficult.
"Oh?" Rose asks, grinning at Brad. "And what does it take, then, oh expert on all things concerning male seduction?"
Brad shrugs. "Girls, take it from me. Just tell the man you want his cock and he'll be ready to go 9 times out of 10. Hell, they'll be breaking down your door."
"Yeah, well, gotta worry about our reputations," Rose counters, making Brad shrug, unconcerned.
"What?" "You know what a reputation is? It's what you use to console yourself when you're using a vibrator instead of the real thing."
He presses his lips together as he snaps his fingers and hums his agreement with his own statement.
"And on that sage advice, I'm outie for lunch. You bitches want me to grab you anything from the diner?"
He points at each of us, waiting for us to shake our head before swooshing out the door. Brad's relaxed more, being his fabulous self more in public, and I'm glad. For now, though, Rose and I look at each other and dissolve into giggles again. I wipe a tear from my eye.
"So, pirate porn, huh? Wouldn't have pegged you as the type."
"Get it? Pegged?" She groans and rolls her eyes at my bad pun, but sobers up.
"Yeah, well, I've been so busy with the boutique, starting it on my own and working the B shift. I'll be there when it opens and I'll be there when it closes. But I haven't really had time to date or have a personal life at all."
"Hire some help," I comment, but Rose shakes her head. "Why not?"
"The boutique isn't quite as popular as this place, and while I'm not worried about living the high life, I'd like to be able to afford to eat more than ramen noodles and box mac and cheese."
"Good point," I joke. "All that MSG and shit'll kill you."
Rose sighs, looking a little forlorn. "I'm probably gonna end up the cat lady who yells at customers to close the door when they try to come in and shop so my horde of cats doesn't escape."
I start with the obvious, wanting to cheer her up. She's the closest thing I've made to a new friend in this town, and I hate seeing her looking this way.
"If you have so many cats that they're gonna escape, your store is gonna close in a hot flash of a minute, Spinster Rose. So there, then you'll have time to date. Problem solved." I give her a pointed look.
"Or, you know, you could date now and bypass the cat scratch fever and fancy feast."
Rose nods her agreement.
"I know, it's just hard, even in a town this size and with tourists coming through. I thought I'd be a successful entrepreneur with a husband and a kid or two by now. But that's just not in the cards, so my boutique is my baby, and I'm so hard up that I listen to pirate porn instead of dating a decent guy with an actual cock. And no, I won't let you look at my browser history."
I chuckle and start rinsing out her conditioner.
"It's okay, honey. Maybe your ship will come in.
Hell, maybe he'll be the one who likes pegging."
"Huh?"
I shake my head, remembering that I'm not in Hollywood anymore and things aren't quite as adventurous. Never mind. Just one word of caution, Rose. If that boat's named Titanic, don't get on the damn thing. She giggles at me, finally relaxing some again. How about you? New in town? Anybody caught your attention? I sigh dreamily and resist the urge to look through the front window again. Maybe. Do you know Evan Hardwick across the street at the garage? She recoils in horror, jerking so hard she nearly bonks her head on the porcelain edge of the rinse sink, but I manage to catch her with quick hands. The asshole who barely speaks, just grunts at people and revs his death machine motorcycle up and down the street at all hours of the night? That Evan Hardwick? I nod, feeling a light blush creep up my neck. That's the one. What can I say? I've got good taste in men. You gotta admit, it's a hopeful last name. I purse my lips as I turn her head and get more of the conditioner. And it's not a death machine. It's a pretty sweet bike. Rose sighs. Have you actually talked to him? I think the boutique was open for almost a year before he said one word to me. And that was only because I took my car in for service and TJ wasn't working that day. I told him what I needed and he grunted, said, 3 o'clock, and walked off. Customer service at its finest. I shrug. She's dead on, even to the way she drops her voice to make it rumble a little. Sounds about right. First thing he ever said to me was at volume 10 as he charged me like a damn bull. I lower my voice into an imitation of Evan, growling. What the fuck are you doing? Rose's eyes widen and her jaw drops, and she sits up, gaping at me while I work on drying her hair. And then what? I smile, working the towel through her hair before squeezing it out. I spin her chair around and pick up my scissors, knowing Rose doesn't need much, but I do want to even her out in the back. Well, after that great introduction, we had a big screaming match in the middle of Main Street. And a week later, I kissed the shit out of him before he ran. But he won't be scared for long. He'll be back. How do you know? I grin, catching Rose's eyes in the mirror. Because now I'm a fear he has to conquer. I kiss the air, smacking my lips, certain I know how this is going to play out. And he might find that in conquering me, well, I like to conquer myself. Rose chuckles. Is that so? Shiver me timbers.
Chapter 8. Evan. Lunchtime in the shop is always a bit awkward, as TJ and I try to make conversation like I'm not a bastard thorn in his side. We don't even eat the same things. He's all about the burgers and enjoying his food, while I seem to take bitter comfort in eating shit that would make more sense as field rations. So here we sit, day after day, unless he escapes to the diner, making small talk about the various cars we're working on, or flipping through the car magazines scattered across the table. I don't even think we're keeping track of what we're saying. I know at least twice a week one of us will go to the other about something we just talked about at lunch, and it devolves into a shouting match because we've already discussed it. But we keep doing it. I guess it's what brothers do. Or at least it's what we do now. I'm damn grateful he's willing to even work with me. But that doesn't make it any less uncomfortable to chit-chat with a guy who knew me before I was fucked in the head with an alphabet diagnosis of PTSD that basically just warns folks that I'm always a breath away from losing it. I can see it in TJ's face, too, sometimes. He remembers when we'd spend hours tinkering with our dad's car, or with the bikes and cars our friends brought us. Hell, our wrench skills are how we paid for the most epic spring break trip ever, A 4-day trip to Lake Havasu in Arizona. I don't think TJ and I slept in the same bed twice those whole 4 days. And I know for damn sure that I never woke up with the same bedmate I did the night before. Thank God for condoms and lady luck favoring the young and foolish. Maybe that's what TJ is looking for. The big brother who was fun-loving and maybe a bit crazy, but was the rock who helped him out when our parents died soon afterward. TJ was ready to give up his dream for this shop and just get a regular job when I, on leave before my first deployment, pulled him aside and told him that in no way, shape, or form was I going to let him do that. Instead, I made him sign up at tech college so he'd have the business skills to go with being a grease monkey. And then I sent him a big chunk of my paycheck each month to make sure he was taken care of. He doesn't know where that guy's gone or why. Sometimes I wonder too. Lots of guys from my unit are doing well, settled stateside with wives and kids. And I always wonder if they're stronger than me for being able to handle the shit we saw overseas better than I can. Or maybe they're less affected because there's something wrong with them, and I'm the normal one. I don't know. I just know that there's always a little kernel of something black at my core, and it swirls, rising and falling outside my control sometimes. No matter how many stupid fucking breathing exercises I try from the VA doc. Maybe it's just what the one guy told me. There are people who are made for war, and people who aren't. Sometimes the people who aren't are forced into war, and it changes them, or it breaks them. I feel eyes on me, and look up from the new bike magazine spread out in front of my microwave tray of Salisbury steak, grainy mashed potatoes, and dark greenish shit that's supposed to be either spinach or beans. I'm not sure which. I look up to see TJ giving me a look. My mouth's full, so I just grunt. What? He leans over from his lunch of a club sandwich on whole wheat to slap me on the shoulder. Guess he's trying to clean up for some reason he's not telling me. How you doing, brother? I give him a what the fuck look. Normally, if TJ has something he wants to ask me or to offer me, he just comes out and says it. This is something new. And new tends to make me put my guard up. New hurts, or at least has the potential to hurt more than the old. Same as always, just eating my damn lunch. I don't ask what he's up to. Like I said, I really don't want to know. But he is in full-on fairy flew up his ass mode, so he keeps going. Well, I'm doing well. Very well, in fact, thanks for asking. He gives me a shit-eating grin, and I growl lightly. Great. Fairy dust and unicorn rainbows. Someone get him a My Little Pony. Ask me why. I set my spoon down, wiping my greasy fingers on my jeans, and rock the chair back on two legs as I look at him, trying to see if there's something different I'm missing. Not seeing anything, I decide the easiest way to get through this is to just let him talk. All right, fucker. Why are you doing so damn well today? I see the excitement behind his eyes, and I flash back again to when we were boys, both whole and happy and full of life. He still looks the same, a wholesome innocence grown into a man who is solid, a brother in every sense of the word. For him, danger is the spice of life, like chili salsa on top of your tacos. You decide how much you get. I, on the other hand, lost that shine a long time ago. I know that sometimes the world will pry your jaws open, jam a funnel in between your lips, and pour fiery hot habanero salsa down your throat, and there isn't a damn thing you can do about it. I don't want to piss on his parade, though, and let him enjoy his innocence. He claps his hands once, nice and loud, the grin on his face spreading. I met the one, man. Remember that car I delivered up to the resort for that tourist? Well, I'm sitting in the lobby waiting for him to come down for his keys and pay the bill when a vision walks in front of me. Her name's Alice, and she works at the resort. Why haven't you seen her before? She's not a local, TJ explains. She just wrapped up a degree in hotel and hospitality management and moved up here. The resort's nice enough to let her stay there. She said she's got an apartment.
She said, huh? So she actually talked to your ugly ass? I ask, feeling a hint of amusement. Does she happen to be blind?
Fuck you, man, TJ laughs. We got to talking. I waited for her break time. We got coffee. And I asked her out. She said yes, and we're going to dinner this weekend.
That's it.
I'm done for it, bro.
He flops back in his chair, a fascinated, dreamy look on his face as he stares at the ceiling.
Yep, I can see the kittens, unicorns, and rainbows falling out of his ears. I laugh a little, full of sarcasm. I'm not trying to be an asshole here, but still, I think TJ needs a reality check. Let me get this straight. You met this chick, had coffee for a few minutes, and you're already planning the wedding?
Yeah, sounds serious.
I snort through my nose, picking up my spoon again.
And everyone says I'm the crazy one.
TJ gives me a dirty look, and I swear he's about to stick his tongue out at me like we're 6 years old again. But he reels it in.
Nah, man, when you know, you know. And this one? I just know. She's it. You'll see.
He goes on, telling me practically verbatim every word they said while they drank coffee. And I can feel his excitement and joy at the happy road spread out before him. As he does, I'm torn between darkness and light, which just makes me more miserable. I'm happy for my kid brother. Truly, I am. He's a good guy. And while I harass him about it, he's not ugly or anything. He keeps his shit together. But somewhere deep inside, in a place I don't want to admit even exists, I'm fucking jealous. How come he gets the happily ever after, and I'm stuck in purgatory, paying for sins I committed long ago on someone else's orders? How come he gets to smile and sleep through the night and look out on the morning with hope, while I only look at the sunrise and wonder if it's the last one I'll see before I go over the edge and get myself killed? I'd love for just a minute of the peace he feels, but that's not my path. I'm never gonna have a happily ever after. There's no woman who would put up with my shit, and I know why. It's hard to love a monster like me. And honestly, I don't want to inflict my damage on anyone else. I just need to keep the lid on the Pandora's box inside me and hope that motherfucker stays shut tight. I push back from the table, offering a hand to TJ as I school my face into a smile I know is only mildly reminiscent of my real one. I'm happy for you. Make sure you invite me to the wedding. I'm gonna go for a ride. I'll be back later this afternoon, but I'll finish that brake realignment before I head out tonight. I keep the smile just long enough for him to inspect me, make sure I'm okay and not about to crumble. I hate it when he does that. He makes me feel like he's just waiting for the moment I can't take it anymore. Finally, he nods.
Sure, bro. It's a beautiful day. And they said they wouldn't be back to pick it up until Wednesday anyway. Get out there and ride a few miles for me, too.
I know he's full of shit now. He's never ridden a motorcycle in his life. It's another one of the differences between us. I've always been the one who pushed the line from the time we were kids. He was the one who kept his bicycle on the sidewalk, while I was the one seeing if that rocky hill was really as dangerous as the other kids said it was. When I built my bike, I offered TJ a ride. His comment was that he had no need to strap himself to a death trap. But maybe that's exactly why I do it. I'm not the suicidal type. But maybe there's a part of me that wants to be taken out of this whole equation that is the world. Tempt fate a little bit. Dare the Grim Reaper to catch me. After all, if he does it, I didn't really do anything wrong. I stalk out to my bike, throwing a leg over the seat and settling my old combat boots on the ground on either side, straddling the machine as I start her up and listen to the grumbling purr. It's another one of the things I can't let go of. I always wear combat boots for work or riding, I look left and right, pulling a big turn across Main Street and pointing my bike toward the mountains. Right as I'm about to twist the throttle and blare out of town, I hear a piercing, loud-ass whistle,